Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank, having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
53106 is our text number. That will cost you 30 cents. Lots of people saying that Sally the Turtle, they should get in contact with your the super vet, your man from Channel 4. I don't know if he makes house calls. You'd have to bring the turtle over there at huge expense to do all that. And I've no doubt somebody in some college around Ireland could get a little flipper going for poor old Sally. Anyway, I'm pleased to say Barbara Scully and Declan Buckley join us once again. Good afternoon to you both.
We're back.
Hello, Sean. Hello. How are you?
You were laughing. You were just chortling there at a poor turtle.
I'm trying to visualise a turtle in my head. I didn't know they'd fins.
No, it's not fin. It's a flipper. She's missing her front flipper because
her paw-like.
A paw. Well, yeah, but
it's
she
there. Things like this.
Yeah, but without the two of them, she goes
around circles.
She goes around circles.
Oh,
and
bless.
She's missing an eye as well, so she didn't even know she's going around in circles.
Is she here in Ireland?
She is. Yeah, a shark bit her.
Oh.
And then she washed for seemingly hundreds of miles out of her usual and waters and was found in Kerry.
Here. Oh, okay.
So they have her in Dingleward in Kerry.
Yeah, that's a nice place.
It's a great place. She's having a great time.
She's lovely.
She's seen the lakes. She's going on, you know, a horse drawn thing.
She's very well equipped for doing the Ring of Kerry because she's already, you know.
The weather's lovely in Kerry. I was down there at the weekend. It was gorgeous.
Okay.
Right.
Time to solve some problems.
Yes.
Okay.
Eyes down for a full house.
Yes.
I had been married for 20 years until last year. I've done everything one is meant to do to move on, but I still can't get my ex off my mind. I'm finding it increasingly difficult as time goes on. Friends and other family members think I'm doing great. That's the perception I've created. No one really knows the actual turmoil I'm going through. Is this kind of thinking ever going to end? I'm struggling. Look at the two of them pointing at each other. No, you answer it.
No, I always feel like I always go first and people then think I'm being a bully and a bossy boots.
No,
you know? Okay, right. Well, first of all, yeah. Pardon?
You're a bully.
I'm not a bully. I used to call that in school, Scully the Bully. Anyway.
Not a great rhyming in school, was it?
No, it wasn't great. Time out. Okay.
Save it for your book.
Okay, yes. I'm sorry to hear that this woman is struggling. Obviously, when you're in a relationship for 20 years and it breaks up, I can imagine that must be very difficult. But I think what's very unhealthy about this is that she seems to be creating, well, she said that she is creating this perception that she's moving on and that she's actually okay. And I think that that's a big problem. You know, I'm all for kind of, in lots of other circumstances, faking it until you make it. But I think when you're talking about how you feel about something or your mental health, it's really important, not that you go around telling everybody and, you know, kind of sharing all your innermost thoughts with all and sundry that you meet. But you should. It's very important to have a tight, maybe small group, whether it's family or whether it's friends, with whom you can be reasonably honest about how you're feeling and about how you're coping with things. And I think it's very unhealthy not to do that, not to have at least one person with whom you can be completely and utterly honest about how you're feeling. And I think that that's very important. So I think that that's the first thing. I think she needs to stop pretending that she's actually doing grand and admit to a few people that she's not doing grand and that she's obviously very sad and that she's finding it very difficult to move on. And I mean, there's no shame in that. When you've been married for 20 years and a relationship breaks up, you know, I mean, it's quite obvious that you'd be having, you know, it's like a bereavement in lots of ways in certain cases. So, you know, there's nothing wrong with saying that I'm not coping with this. I'm not doing so well. Even if your other half has perhaps moved on and seems to be doing grand, there's no reason to pretend you're not. And the other thing then is that as well as trying to confide in at least one or two other people, is that, you know, again, I would think she would probably be well advised to go and maybe seek some professional counselling as well to help her. And I know Tuzla have a list of, I don't know where this person is from, but Tuzla have a list on their website of counselling agencies broken down by county, so she'd be able to find somewhere nearby that might be able to help her. But I think she shouldn't keep this struggle to herself. She needs to share it.
It's the kind of thing, you know, when people, and many people go through this thing where, you know, a breakup after a long relationship, and as you said, it is like a bereavement, especially if you're the person for whom the change kind of was thrust upon.
Yeah.
You know, because you're left with, well, I still have feelings for you, positive feelings for you, and also I have positive feelings for what could have been our relationship. So you're left in that kind of like loss.
Yeah.
That sense of loss. So there's two aspects for this problem for me. One is the process of going through, you know, basically getting over it.
Yeah.
That process.
Yeah.
And part in the letter seemed to suggest to me that this person wasn't sure how long that process would take. Like, you know, how many more weeks do I need to feel like this before I'm better? And obviously that's not really something that you can answer.
Measure.
You know, because part of that loss is going to be with you forever. But that's just sadly how life goes, that, you know, especially if you feel like you've lost something that you, part of your dreams and your life, that you, the way you thought your life was going to be, that's quite a harsh loss.
It is, yeah. It's about reimagining your future, isn't it? In a different way than you do.
And the imagined future you had is now gone.
And now it's gone and you have to kind of try and work out. And I think that's one of the things that can be very depressing, is when you can't see where your future
the
is going to be.
And that's the other aspect. That's where I was going to go with this, because I also think that there's a certain, I can't stop thinking about him, is basically what her letter is saying. Mm. I can't stop thinking about him. She's not thinking about him because he's changed. He isn't that person that he used to be. She's thinking about him in the context of that relationship, in that life that she thought was going to be hers forever. So in a weird way, it's kind of like she's, it's an addiction to a concept. She's like, she needs to break that connection. It's like she was trying to give up cigarettes or using her a phone. She needs to find ways to distract herself from that whole thing, because she's not going to get that back. She needs to find ways to move on. So if I was her, I would treat it like I was giving up cigarettes. Don't put myself in the situations where I'm going to feel those things, try to distract myself, blah, blah, blah. Find ways to...
Mm. Yeah, if they're married for 20 years... There may well be kids in the scenario. That makes it more difficult because there's going to be ongoing contact.
Yeah, yeah.
But that doesn't mean that she can't create a new life for herself that you know, has some of the same old, but not lonely.
But I think what's keeping her stuck is the fact that she's letting on to everybody that she's doing much better. So she's putting much more energy into pretending she's all right.
Yeah, I wonder, you know, because I remember interviewing a woman who'd written a book about divorce law in Ireland. Who was a lawyer, and said the thing that strikes her most of all that she hears again and again and again when people have marital breakdowns, that, you know, if it's a woman, if her husband had been hit by a bus and died, people would be crossing the road to empathise with her and sympathise with her. If she splits up from her husband, they're crossing the road to avoid talking to her, and people want to hear, are you over it now? We're over it now, so we don't have to talk about it anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And so she may feel a bit of pressure, even from people who do genuinely care about her, that they don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Which, but again, it goes back to your point of needing to go to a counsellor.
Yeah, absolutely.
More than ever.
Absolutely. But I think that, you know, she should be able to find at least one person with whom she can be really honest, you know, if as often as she needs to be, you know.
Yeah.
But it is a process. It's the process of going through all of the stages of that kind of loss or that bereavement of your relationship. You will go through stages of feeling like, oh, you know, this didn't really happen. Now I know it's happened, but I still want it, to actually getting to that acceptance. Maybe it's even understanding exactly the reasons why it happened in the first place will help reach some kind of a conclusion. So
yeah, someone says, could this person be a man and not a woman, as we're all presuming? Well, they do give us a name, but we don't read out the name, so we do know it's a woman, so we can't say that. Someone else says, firstly, I hope that's not my wife, as we split after 20 years of marriage, but I'd seriously recommend counselling and a good counsellor. It's working for me, thank God, says the text. Or Paula says, just date your way through it, keep busy and distracted, that will keep you going. Dating might depress you even more. Especially if, like, a series of deadbeats. Oh, crikey, I only had one good one. Aidan in Sligo says, Barbara's 100% correct. Tell your family how you feel. Be honest with your closest people. You need to be able to vent. Otherwise, you'll explode and you'll be taking backward steps perpetually.
We have had regular situations where people have said, oh, my friend is going through this, and they just can't stop talking about their feelings. So there's a definite balance to be struck between sharing and being heard. And also being fixated and being a bit of a bore.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
people don't like bores.
Yeah. Well, because it's hard to take on if you want to hear the same thing over and over again, even no matter how much you care.
Because you can't say anything, because somebody's gone through their own stuff. You can't fix it for them.
You can't fix it for them. You just have to listen.
So you just listen. And sometimes that can be
That's it.
Anyway, our next question is at the other end of this process. My future mother-in-law has a habit of imposing on mine and my fiance's relationship. We're getting married soon, and recently she arrived to her home to show me the dress she bought for our wedding. She bought for our wedding. It's a white dress and in a real bridal style dress. I couldn't believe it. Am I right to be enraged? Should I say something? My fiancé doesn't seem to see the problem. She can be tricky enough, so I don't want to upset any apple carts with her or my fiancé, or just make an idiot out of herself on the day.
Yeah, this has been... I'm led into going, yeah, your mother-in-law is a horror. You know, you should be really... But no, I actually don't think that this person should be really angry. I know that maybe in Victorian times there were very strict etiquette and manners around how weddings were meant to be, and that's all very lovely, but times have moved on. People do different things, a lot of different things. Shock horror, in this, you know, two brides can now get married to each other in our modern world, and, you know, so the whole thing about what people wear to weddings and all that kind of stuff has changed a lot. My view would be that if you're having a wedding or a bar mitzvah or a party of any kind and you want certain manners to prevail at that party, you have to either only invite people who you know believe in that particular ethos, or you need to tell them up front. You need to say, I'm having this kind of wedding. I want to be the only person in white. Don't wear white. Because otherwise...
No, you can't.
But if you can't, then you're actually recognising in some way that what you're really saying is... I want the world to be a certain way for me, and when they don't do that for me, I'm going to get annoyed and stamp my
feet. In fairness, I think in the world of weddings, things have remained remarkably traditional. You know, heterosexual weddings down for the last decades. Things, and I mean, I'm not one for rules or regulations or any of that nonsense. But the one thing you do hear all the time is you don't upstage the bride. You know what I mean? And one of the rules is if the bride is wearing white, and, you know, she may not be, but if she is, and clearly this one is, it's not really a great idea to wear white. And especially if it's a bridal style dress. I mean, the mother-in-law is going to look a bit daft.
Well, that's a different issue.
Yeah,
that's
a different issue. But the other issue is whether she should actually do something about it. And I will defer to my own mother, who's a very wise woman, and one of the great nuggets of advice that she would still give me is, don't criticise your husband's family. It's lethal. Unless it's really important, don't go there.
Which is where I was going with this, because at the end of the day, you're just having one day of a party. That's all it is. It's a party. And if you're getting hung up on what you're wearing at that party, then you're setting yourself up for...
It's about that, because the first line of this is, my future and mother-in-law has a habit of imposing on my fiancé's relationship. I think this is something she can identify in a very kind of clear way as being something she can tackle, maybe. And she would have the weight of etiquette and all the rest.
Or maybe by putting that sentence at the beginning of her letter, she's trying to create in our heads an image of somebody who's a certain type, because I'm just not seeing any evidence other than they're fighting over
a dress. No, she hasn't given us any evidence, but I think that this perhaps could be the straw that broke the camel's back, or could be the thing that she thinks she can take on and have right on her side.
Or it could be that she thinks she's right, because she thinks that Victorian wedding etiquette still has to prevail.
Victorian wedding etiquette.
Well, maybe it's Middle Ages. It's, you know, let's put the woman in white so we know she hasn't had sex.
If it's a wedding and the mother-in-law turns up dressed like she's getting married, she's going to look insane.
She's going to look absolutely insane.
Yeah. Let her, because then she wins forever, because it's like every single thing the mother.
Well, I can understand the bride. Yeah, I mean, yeah, fine. Let her make an idiot out of herself. That's the advice I'm saying, is leave it alone. Don't go there. Don't get involved. Let her make an idiot out of herself. But the thing will be, which I'm sure will probably annoy her, and I'm not a traditionalist, will be that she'll have wedding photographs, which will be somewhat rude.
You married your son?
Yeah, which was the bride.
Is this
What's
your wedding in Alabama we attended?
Exactly, you know, it makes it all a bit weird. So she might have to, you know, just be aware of that when you're doing the photographs. Make sure you get plenty of photographs so you can edit out the mother-in-law.
How much is the dowry,
the white
I wonder,
dress?
Though? That would be the other thing I'd want to know. How much the dowry would be?
You're very funny, do you know that?
I'm hilarious.
Okay, all right, so that's the advice. Let her go ahead with it.
But at
the same time, though, yeah, is it just this, or is there a pattern?
I think there's other things. And I mean, you know what? She's not, unless you're going to have to live with the mother-in-law, you know, if it's not an issue for the fiancé, and if it's not a direct...
He doesn't care.
No, he doesn't care. But the one where it can become problematic, and it's very hard to walk away, and we've had it before on the show, is if there's kids come along and the mother-in-law starts getting involved in the parenting end, that's where the real fireworks will happen. But I'd say this isn't worth getting into a big row about it. I'd let her off. Just take plenty of photos.
Yeah, a lot of people are saying pretty much the same thing. Let her wear it. It's the mother-in-law that will look the fool.
Yeah.
A relative at my wedding wore white. The photos they are in look so ridiculous.
Yes, exactly.
So there's another text.
That's the problem.
I'm a 30... Yes, but the mother then goes, why didn't anybody say it to me? I'm a 37-year-old guy and I've been single for 2 years. All my friends are coupled up, married, and most have at least one child. Contrary to what I expected, I have not been in any way sidelined by them. In fact, they all actively invite me to their homes for dinners or kids' birthday parties, etc. However, I'm increasingly unable to relate to their lives, and I find interaction with their children tedious and redundant. One of the couples has asked me to be a godfather to the new baby. I feel very caught here, as I don't want the burden of having to spend time with the child, but I also don't want to upset or disappoint my friends. Any help would be appreciated.
Yeah, I suppose the first thing I want to know is whether you reject Satan, because that's the only thing that's relevant to being a godparent. Everything else is a bonus. I think your friends think that they're doing something nice for you, and yeah, they're excited about the fact that they have new children. You know, in the church's mind, there's a responsibility attached to being a godparent, but in a family environment, I don't think they're asking you to become the child's legal guardian if they disappear at sea or anything like that. I don't think that's what they're saying.
No, that's a different thing. Yeah,
so they're just
They are expecting, though, I think, generally
speaking, to quit the Lego at birthdays.
Yeah, you remember, but you have to remember when the birthday is, and of course, as they get older, then like, you know, it's more and more. It's
okay,
like,
you
know, they're 21st. Here's a car.
I get that. And what I would say to like a, you know, a slightly ambivalent heterosexual male who doesn't have kids that and doesn't particularly want to engage with them on that level.
Did you know he's heterosexual?
Because he said that he...
No, that's true. He hasn't said that.
Oh, God. Yeah.
God, you're so Declan, you're so homophobic, Declan.
Making these assumptions about people's sexuality.
Oh, my God.
God, Declan.
I just figured because he's hanging out with other heterosexual people in their little clique that they must be...
Who all probably got married in Victorian white dresses.
Yes. Oh, my God. I suppose what I would say is that parents with kids want to be free from the kids sometimes, and you know, they want their friends to hang around with them. They don't want to be talking about their kids all of the time, so don't worry about that. But I would also say that, you know, being as you're around your friends' kids, like other people's kids are horrible, I know that, but as you get used to them, I think you get to like them a little bit more, and you might find that, you know, buying them presents, because you don't have to do it for your own kids, you might...
I think if you find, I think kids are like, they're like people, believe it or not. Some of them you like and some of them you don't. And if you find other people's kids boring and tedious, then you'll find them. I mean, you know, I have kids, but I find other people's kids, not all of them, but some of them very boring and tedious. Mm. But what I would say to this guy is, go and tell them you don't want to be a godparent, because it, although it isn't about legal guardianship, or it doesn't really even bring babysitting necessarily duty with it, I do think that in families, and I am speaking from some personal experience here, always have your godparent from within the family, because they will be the ones who will remember the birthdays and the Christmases and will be around. When you start moving out to your friends, unless you're really lucky, like, you know, the youngest child very often is the one that has the really crappy godparents because you've had to move out a little bit from the inner circle, and they get the ones who don't remember and who don't show up to their confirmation and who don't show up to their communion and who forget birthdays and important events and all that kind of stuff. And that... within a family, that does become an issue then. Like,
but sometimes you get families where, you know, the kids might pick the grandparents to be the godparents because they're actually going to do the baptism or the thing in the church, and it's like blah, blah, blah. And they're not going to be around in 5 years' time. Or you have the you know, oh, I really miss my brother. He moved to Australia, but you never see him, or whatever. I think I have two godparents. One of whom, you know, was always, when I was a kid, would remember my birthday, and the other one never saw me again, practically. So I don't think it's a big deal. I think
But that's because you had a godparent who never saw you again.
Look how I
we don't know if this is a first child or a second child or whatever, but you know, parents are consumed by their kids.
Yes.
If you go and they say, we want to, you know, Declan, we want to give you the great honour of being godfather to little Tommy, and if you say, nah, I've no interest, you might as well have said your child's ugly.
Know something? I would far prefer if somebody came to me and said, Barbara, it's not really my gig. I'm no use at that. I don't really want to do that. And I don't want you to get annoyed with me, or your kid to get annoyed with me.
I did that to my brother. My brother and his wife asked me when their first kid was born to be the godparent to their first kid. And I said no, because
this is your brother's child.
Yeah, because I knew they'd have more kids. And I'm around.
You wanted a better one.
Yeah, I wanted to. I'm still waiting.
Yeah. Can I have a look at it first?
Yeah, yeah, no, not that one. Nah. Next.
Give that to somebody else.
If somebody else can do that a lot better than me, I'm not sure I'd be able to engage.
Well, stop. Okay. Well, maybe they would. I don't know. I'd be kind of a bit nervous that they might take great offense at it, even though they might try not to. But, you know.
No, consistency is the thing with God. I don't think it's got anything to do with the church. The worst godparents will rock up on the church and stand up and sit down and light candles and do all that malarkey and go to the party afterwards. It's when they're 10 and when they're 12 and when they're 15. It's all of those times. You want somebody who's still going to be around and still going to be there. You know, and it comes down to presence. Literally, P-R-E-S-E-N-T-S, not presence.
Yeah.
A little bit of both, actually.
And making them
but
feel
mostly presence.
Special.
Yeah, mostly
presence.
It's mostly that.
Marie says, I was asked to be a godmother. I said, I have no religious inclination, so don't expect that from me. And I'm quite selfish. Know this about me and then decide. They still went with me, says Marie.
Genius.
I think most
Maybe
people,
that's the, way
the
to
religious
go.
Thing is neither here nor there.
Someone else says, sure, if he's no interest, just don't be involved in their lives. His friends' lives are going to be consumed by their children from here on out. They don't want him around if he's lacking in any feelings towards them. Ooh. You'd hope not.
You don't bring your kids with you every time you go out and socialise, no matter what age
they
are.
And that's the thing. You kind of get a sense that you're trying to hang on to that bit of yourself.
He
that's
might
pre-kid.
Want to go to all their birthday parties and all that kind of malarkey, but, you know, for the nights out. But I don't think he should be the godparent. I think he should stand up, put his hand up and say thank you, but no thank you.
Right. On the question that we had in earlier about the mother-in-law wants to wear white, Kim Kardashian had all her sisters wear white bridesmaid dresses at her wedding
then.
To Kanye.
Oh, well, then.
It was her third marriage, though.
Okay. Well, if the Kardashians do it, it's obviously cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
so
maybe,
that's okay.
Obviously, the mother-in-law is a big fan of the Kardashians.
Well, maybe you could mention that and say, oh, you're going to be like Kim Kardashian. And then she might find that terribly wounding and change her mind.
Or amazingly, like...
My godmother was adamant that she was not my godmother, despite the photographic evidence. Must have been some party by christening. Yeah, that's not great. Not many presents there, would have thought. And the first question we had was from that person who was divorced last year and still was finding difficulty kind of moving on from it. Somebody just texted in to say, I was divorced after 20 years. It was the greatest day. I was reborn, which is of absolutely no use to the poor woman who we were talking about at the start.
But I like her attitude.
But good for you.
It's good attitude.
Barbara and Declan, thank you both very much.
Moncrief with Gas Networks Ireland. Aren't you tired of that ugly fuel storage tank? Having to order and write that big check for the delivery guy? Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.